There's an old legend, and it says that every human being has a guardian spirit, an angel, you could say. And just before we're born, our angel takes our soul on a world tour. We see everything that's going to happen to us in our lives, the friends we'll make, the lovers we'll take, our homes, our journeys, our sanctuaries, and our exiles, and everything that will come to us in our life. And then, this world is so strange to us. It's loud and messy and spicy and way too bright. So different from the celestial glory we're accustomed to. But in its own earthly way, beautiful, desirable, irresistible. And then, our angel takes us to meet World Maker, the one who made the world, the host of the land where souls come from before they're born and return to when they die, the mystery of mysteries. We tell World Maker everything we've just seen and felt and touched, and World Maker listens to the whole story with infinite patience. Doesn't interrupt, listens from beginning to end, every detail. And only when we're done does World Maker reach out and touch us, and at that moment, we forget everything we have just told. A great gift of forgetfulness, they say, so that when we're born, it seems that we see everything as if for the first time. They say that's why sometimes as you go through life, it seems that you see fragments or hear echoes of a world you once knew very well. And the legend also says we still carry the mark of World Maker's touch, an indentation on our upper lip, right underneath the nose. For most of us, the touch was light, the mark is shallow. But this story is about someone who has the divine dimple deeply etched, as if World Maker had to press extra hard and give an extra dose of forgetfulness, knowing how hard it would be at the beginning of his journey. Once upon a time, in a room at Toronto General Hospital, a baby was born as sick as a baby could ever be. We catch a glimpse as they hurry him to the examination table. He's as white as paper, eyes bruised shut, a ghost baby, too weak for his mother to hold him. We hear a doctor's voice explain. His condition is critical. We've called the transfer team from the neonatal intensive care unit at the hospital for sick children. They will rush him over. We sit holding hands, sliding into the shock of catastrophe, where everything happens in a rush and a reverie, too fast and too slow at the same time. We feel detached from the panic, as if we're watching the movie of our own emergency. The doctors and nurses huddle around the baby, taking his vital signs. Appearance, pulse, grimace, activity, respiration. We hear a doctor's voice pulse. Explain. He grimace. Has an Apgar score activity. Of 2. Respiration. 6 or 7 is considered normal. Grimace. His cord was wrapped around his pulse. Foot. There are activity. Subtle signs of genetic disorder. Respiration. We do not know why your baby's so sick. The specialists are on their way. We sit holding hands. And I say, he doesn't even have a name yet. And his mother says, we can't let him die without a name. And we quickly decide to name him after a beloved grandfather, the one who died not long before. And she says, go and tell them our son has a name. And I hurry across the room and come to the doctors and the nurses, and I say, our son has a name. And I say the name out loud, and then louder, and go back and sit and we hold hands again and somehow feel comforted that we've given him a good name. And together we murmur the new name again and again, a small spell against oblivion. But for this story, I'll use the nickname we whispered late at night, imagining him as a small soul, a flickering flame so far away, somewhere past the furthest stars, drifting on a dark and distant sea, seeking the way that leads to Earth. His secret name, his midnight name, Starchild. The transfer team arrives and begins the blood transfusion, and I say, there's something else I must do, and hurry back across to the portable crib and lean over and gently reach in and gently, gently touch the baby and gently rock him back and forth a half a millimeter each way and sing the song I used to sing to his older brother when he was a baby. Dance to your daddy, my little laddie. Dance to your daddy, my little boy. You shall have a fishy in your little dishy. You shall have a fishy when the boats come home. And then go back and say to his mother what I've done, and she, in bed, exhausted, says, whatever happens next, at least he has a good name, and he's heard a song, and he's danced with his daddy. And finally, we weep. The transfer team begins to hurry the crib out of the room, and I follow alongside down the hallway to the elevator, all the way down to the basement, through the maze of tunnels that connects the great hospitals, up another elevator, left, right, down the hall. We emerge in the neonatal intensive care unit. It is now the middle of the night. I look around and see the flashing green lights, hear the monitors beep, 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 beep. Incessant soundtrack of intensive care. Get dizzy, fade to black, faint and fall upon the floor. Now this became a legend in the annals of the ward. The night four babies arrived by helicopter, 12 by frantic ambulance, and one in a high-tech trundle buggy. And in the very middle of the chaos, a father fainted and fell and slept peacefully in the middle of the storm as everybody walked around him, going about their business, saving lives. And in my brief sleep, I have a dream. I see a procession walking through the darkness, carrying torches, singing joyful songs, walking towards a vast building filled with light, like an ocean liner on a midnight sea. It is the Hospital for Sick Children. So bewildering to hear such songs of joy while I'm so worried about our own sick boy. And then I see the face of the man leading the procession, and it is my own beloved father, who died not long before. Behind him, my grandparents, long gone, and teachers I'd once loved, and a long line of ancestors. And I realize in my dream, they've come from from the land where souls live before they're born and return to when they die. I step up, take my father's hand, and begin to walk with him towards the hospital for sick children, and even in my exhausted dreaming, I too join the jubilant singing. And so we moved into the parents' lounge just down the hall from the NICU. And we were surprised by how quiet it was. The mothers and fathers sit holding hands, reluctant to ask about each other's children and saying little about their own. We sit waiting to gather information from the passing nurses. We wait for the doctors to give us test results and medical reports. And data from the monitors, non-stop beeps that measure our children's troubled sleep. Silently we keep our night-long vigils, and silently we pass our endless days. And silently we wait for the doctors to say whose babies will go home that day, and whose are holding steady, and whose have begun to slip away. We feel so overwhelmed in the middle of this high-tech realm. We lack a language. We have no words. We do not know what needs to be said or how to name our nightmare dreads. For some of us wish secretly for a merciful death, and others pray for a sudden cure. And all of us fear the lifelong pain of a child born with a damaged brain. If only there was a story to tell. Some piece of wisdom to guide us through the hopes and terrors of the NICU. Oh, doctors, you who can measure the faintest heartbeat of the sickest baby, can you measure the distance a star child must travel to be born? One day, his mother looked around and said, "It's too damn quiet in here. Nobody's talking or singing to their babies. I don't want his first words to be beep, beep, beep. Go into the ward and tell him a story or sing him a lullaby. Tell him about his big brother. Tell him about your dad, who he's named after. Tell him about the neighborhood, about the big wide world. Tell him all your silly jokes and every fairy tale in the world, but hurry! Now's the time for some emergency storytelling." I got up, ran down the hall, came into the ward, sat down by the crib, leaned my forehead against the plexiglass, and began. "How many miles to Babylon? 60 miles and 10. Can I get there by candlelight? Yes, and back again. Star Child, where are you? Can you hear me? I know you're scared and lost and far away, and probably you don't even want to come here into this little body stuck with needles and tubes and smelling of antiseptic. Well, maybe you'd rather stay out there in the land where souls live before they're born and return to when they die. But we want you to stay. We don't want you to go away. We want you to walk in beauty one day. Don't lose the signal, little one. You keep listening, sweet boy. My voice will be a beacon you can navigate by. If you keep listening, I'll keep talking. I will talk you in. Just the way an air traffic controller speaks to a frightened passenger who takes the controls if the pilot gets sick. Teaching them to fly and land a plane they've never flown before. If you keep listening, I'll keep talking. I'll tell you stories. I'll tell you great stories. I'll tell you the greatest fairy tales in the world. I'll build you a house of stories to keep the storms away. Star Child, I will make my stories so suspenseful, you will never dream of leaving until the whole story's told. And that may take a long, long time. Listen. Once upon a time, there was an old man and old woman, and the old woman made a Johnny cake. A little boy made a fine, sweet dough, and she gave him two stars for eyes, and she called him her Star Child, and put him in the oven to bake. She said to the old man, "Don't open the oven door while I'm gone," and she left. Well, after a while, he could smell the baking, so he opened the door just to take a little peek, and Johnny Cake jumped out. The old man said, "Where are you going, Johnny Cake?" He started to run. He said, "Well, I can outrun you." "No, you can't." But the Johnny Cake did, and as he ran, he said, "Johnny Cake, ho, Johnny Cake, hi, no one can catch me as I roll by." And he came to the old woman who said, "Where are you going, Johnny Cake?" "I outran an old man and I can outrun you too." "No, you can't." But he did. "Johnny Cake, ho, Johnny Cake, hi, no one can catch me as I roll by." He rolled by a cow and a horse and a goat, and they all said, "Where are you going, Johnny Cake?" And he said, "I outran an old man and old woman, I can outrun you too." "No, you can't," they said, and started to chase him, but he ran faster. "Johnny Cake, ho, Johnny Cake, hi, no one can catch me as roll by." And he rolled right out of the country, right into the city, right down University Avenue, right down past the hospital for sick children, and the doctors and the nurses came running out and said, "Where are you going, Johnny Cake?" "I outran an old man, an old woman, a cow, a horse, a goat. I can outrun you too." "No, you can't," they said. And they ran down the street chasing the Johnny Cake with their IV racks and their stethoscopes. But he ran faster and he ran and said, "Johnny Cake, ho, Johnny Cake, hi, no one can catch me as I roll by." Rolled on and on and on, way past Babylon, 80 miles and 10, and a million times again. "Johnny Cake, ho, Johnny Cake, hi," rolling off the earth into the sky. Breaking orbit into space, what a race, till he was safe. Far away beyond the stars, so very far, all alone. "No one can catch me as I roll by." Thank you. will happen next, Star Child? How will this story end? When the thread's been broken, how will it mend? Days passed and nights passed, and we told him every story we knew and then began to make them up. We told him all about his big brother, how he'd painted a red flower and taped it to the hospital wall for good luck, all about his grandpa, who he's named after, who died not long before. We read the Jungle Book, Just So stories. We even read the Canterbury Tales. And then we used to say his first words would be, "Juan that April with his sure sota, the drought of March hath persed toe the rota." And at first we were the only parents making noise in the ward. But after a while, the other mothers and fathers got the idea. And they began to read aloud and tell stories and sing their songs and do their nursery rhymes. And after a while, the whole ward filled up with the sound of stories and rhymes. A river of once upon a times. But he was not getting better, and he was not getting worse. As if he hovered between heaven and earth and hadn't decided to be all the way born. And one summer afternoon, I was sitting in the ward, as usual. But when I heard the monitor's incessant beeps and saw him there so fragile in his sleep, on that particular summer day, all my fatherly courage went away. My tongue froze. I lost my stories. I even forgot how to cry, even though there were tears in my eyes. I felt so helpless. I turned to ice. I sat there and couldn't speak and couldn't move. But after a while, I got up and I left the ward, came out on the street, left the hospital, began to walk step by step. And saw nothing and heard nothing, and Star Child ho, Star Child high, nothing could touch me as I walked by. All the way up University Avenue, kilometer after kilometer, couldn't see, couldn't hear, couldn't think, couldn't feel. All the way up, left on Davenport to the bottom of the ravine, up along the dry creek bed, all the way to St. Clair. I must have turned west, because not long after, I found myself in our own backyard, and I was sitting under the wild plum tree, but couldn't move, couldn't speak, couldn't feel, couldn't move, just sat. Couldn't lift the beer someone put in my hand or answer the phone someone put in the other hand, just sat there. But when the shadows of the tree lengthened across the yard, a neighbor came across the street. She stood next to me and she said, "When I was born, I almost died. In fact," she said, "I still carry my own death certificate." And this is the story she told. When she was born, she weighed 1 pound. It was a little country hospital somewhere in France, and the doctor said to her parents, "Your daughter's going to die." They had no NICU in those days. And her father and mother said, "We would like to take her home to die." And the doctor said, "Yes, of course, we understand, but you can see how busy it is. There are emergencies. We are going to sign the death certificate now and come out in the morning to see what happened." And so they took their baby daughter with her death certificate back to their farmhouse. And her father heated 8 big bricks and put them in a circle, wrapped them in blankets, and he put his baby girl in the middle, the way a farmer would do with a sick lamb. And in the morning, she gave her first cry. And they knew that maybe she would not die. When the doctors came out in the morning, they were the ones who were surprised. Then she said, I still carry my death certificate, so I never forget how I came into the world. Tell your son I send my love. It was dark when she finished. I thanked her for her story, took the subway back downtown, came into the hospital, came up to the ward, sat by the crib, and told jokes all night long. The night nurses wondered about that strange guy who could laugh and cry at the very same time. Not long afterwards, he gave his first cry. Not much of a cry. A tremulous squeak, a tiny squawk. But for the first time, we thought he might not die. And you should have seen the mothers and fathers and nurses and doctors jump for joy. Jubilation, jubilation, jubilation. Star Child made a noise. Star Child has a voice. That night I told him a new story. Star Child, you're not the first one to come into this world with a cry. Listen. In the beginning of the world, World Maker made sun and moon and darkness and rain and man and woman. But in those days, they had no heart. And one day, World Maker called the four children together and said, Sun and moon and darkness and rain, the time is coming for me to leave the world I have made. But before I go, I would like to know what your plans are when I'm gone. And World Maker said to Sun, What about you, Sun? What are you going to do? Oh, World Maker, said Sun, I am going to burn with all of my strength. Now, that's not a good idea, said World Maker, because if you did that, you would burn up my creation. You have to take turns with rain, and after you warm the earth, rain will come and refresh it. How about you, Rain? What are your plans? I will pour and pour and pour and pour and pour upon the earth with all my strength, said the rain. I don't think so, said World Maker. Then you would drown the creation. Take turns with sun. How about you, darkness? How about you? World Maker, I will rule forever. And then how could my creatures behold the loveliness of the creation I have given them, said World Maker. That is not a good idea, darkness. Here's what's going to happen. Only when the moon is in its last quarter will it be your turn to rule. And moon, you're my strange, sweet child, and I will tell you what's going to happen. When I'm gone, you will circle the earth, sometimes full and round, and sometimes as thin as a knife blade. You will circle the earth, cutting loose dreams. And this is the way it will be forever. And so saying, World Maker disappeared. And now, day by day, there were small signs of improvement. One day, the nasogastric tube came out. One day, they unhooked him from the monitors. One day, the bruises faded, and he opened his eyes. And the doctors were surprised. But one of them was particularly wise and said, Even in the NICU, there are many mysteries, and sometimes the things we don't understand clear up by themselves. And we finally began to dare to hope. And now it was the night before we brought him home. And I was sitting in the ward as usual, amid the monitors beeping and the infant sleeping. Only Starchild was awake, his eyes opening at the sound of a familiar voice.
How many miles to Babylon? 60 miles and 10. Can I get there by candlelight? Yes. And back again.
If your heels be nimble and light, you can get there by candlelight. Hey, Starchild, I never told you what happened to the Johnny Cake. Listen. The Johnny Cake couldn't stay out there forever, out beyond the stars, so very far, all alone. So one day the Johnny Cake came back towards the earth and came right up to the edge of the river that flows between here and there. And on the riverbank was a little red fox who said, "Where are you going, Johnny Cake?" "Well, I outran an old man, an old woman, a cow, a horse, a goat, the medical personnel of the hospital for sick children, and I can outrun you too." And the little red fox said, "Excuse me, could you come a little bit closer and tell me again? I just couldn't hear you very well the first time." And the Johnny Cake came rolling right up to the little red fox and said, "Well, I outran an old..." "Excuse me," said the fox, "please come a little bit closer and tell me again right in my ear so I can hear." And the Johnny Cake came right up to the fox and said, "I..." It's as far as he got. The little red fox opened its jaws and gobbled him up, and that was the end of the Johnny Cake. But the fox lived happily ever after. And I guess he's still waiting out at the edge of that river that flows between here and there. And I guess all of us will meet that fox one day. And as for Hart, well, when World Maker disappeared, Hart came into the world. And Hart was small and red, about the size of my fist, and Hart was crying. Just like you, Starchild. Just like you. And Hart came to sun and moon and darkness and rain and said, "I would like to meet the one who made the world. I would like to meet the one who made me. I weep because I cannot see the one who made the world." And they said, "We cannot tell you where World Maker has gone. World Maker disappeared and left only the creation." And so Hart said, "In that case, I will go into man and woman, and through them I will continue my search." And so Hart jumped into man and woman. And ever since then, every child born of man and woman is born with a longing to meet the one who made the world, the mystery of mysteries, host of the land where souls come from before they're born and return to when they die. And we call that longing heart. Starchild, you're coming home tomorrow. Your big brother painted another red flower and taped it to the bedroom wall for good luck. Your grandparents will be there. All the neighbors are waiting to welcome you to the world. Well, the doctors are amazed you made it this far. They say we have to watch for the milestones to know what kind of human being you'll be. I guess that just adds to the suspense. Well, whatever happens next, I hope you never lose your songs. You hold on to your stories. May your heels be nimble and light. Hope you keep searching for the one who made the world. Mind those foxes.